When earlier this year, I was giving a series of talks, and in the middle of the series, I talked something about pain, and there was a lot of interest among the group here to have a talk devoted towards the topic of pain, and being more physical pain was the idea, since that's something which sooner or later most meditators will have to come to terms with and learn to relate their meditation with. And so finally there's an opening in this busy Dharma talk schedule to talk about physical pain. So that's the topic of today, a very painful topic. And hopefully it interests enough of you who are here. I don't know how many of you are here now who were there then, who requested it. It's been so long. And I know pain is a physical pain is a very rich and important topic, but it's not so obvious on the surface. Many people will have some degree of pain in meditation and will have the attitude, oh, when this pain is gone, oh, then I can really meditate. So the idea being that the pain is a hindrance or a problem to meditation, and just let's figure out how to get rid of it so that my meditation can really start. The idea some people have is that meditation is mostly about becoming calm and having some calm, joyful feeling, peaceful feeling. And so physical pain seems like, you know, really the opposite of being calm and peaceful. And so that's just a problem and it shouldn't be there. And to the degree it is there, and you maybe some people understand it to be part of the practice, they only understand it's there as it's there to kind of get rid of in the practice. So let's figure out how to use our attention like some great laser or bazooka and just kind of bring it to bear on the pain, so that figure out how to just kind of blast it out of existence so we can get to what it's really all about, which is to be peaceful. And I think that in a simplistic way, or it can be seen simplistically, this kind of attitude, where it's a very kind of lightweight calm that people want. And rather than being calm, I think maybe it's more useful to talk about mindfulness meditation as trying to cultivate an open-hearted, open-mindful, open-minded attitude towards all our life. And so we're not trying to differentiate and say, I'm only going to be open-minded and open-hearted in this particular part of my life. When I'm calm, then I can do it. But rather, the real task, the real challenge of any deep spirituality is how to have that open-minded approach or open-hearted attitude to life, regardless of what's going on. And so that pain doesn't become a hindrance, but rather is one more place where we try to develop a meditative awareness that in a certain way includes it and is open to it, as opposed to condemning it or criticizing it or trying to blast it away. And in this kind of spirit, there's this beautiful poem by Rumi, and it goes like this. One dervish said to another, "What was your vision of God's presence?" "I haven't seen anything, but for the sake of conversation, I'll tell you a story. God's presence is there in front of me, a fire on the left, a lovely stream on the right. One group walks toward the fire, into the fire, another toward the sweet flowing water. No one knows which are blessed and which not. Whoever walks into the fire appears suddenly in the stream. A head goes under on the water surface. That head pokes out of the fire. Most people guard against going into the fire and so end up in it. Those who love the water of pleasure and make it their devotion are cheated with this reversal. The trickery goes further. The voice of the fire tells the truth, saying, 'I am not fire. I am fountainhead. Come into me and don't mind the sparks.' If you are a friend of God, fire is your water. If you wish to have a hundred thousand set of moth wings, so you could burn them away one set a night. The moth sees light and goes into fire. You should see fire and go toward light. Fire is what of God is world consuming, water world protecting. Somehow each gives the appearance of the other. To these eyes you have now, what looks like water burns, but what looks like fire is a great relief to be inside. One molecule mote second thinking of God's reversal of comfort and pain is better than any attending ritual. That splinter of intelligence is substance, the fire and water themselves, accidental, done with mirrors. So, I don't know how you reacted to that poem. Some of you maybe just wanted to cry. Some of you laugh. And some of you maybe recoil in horror at this idea of this reversal. And maybe we don't want to say it as being a universal truth, that you have to always turn into the fire. But fire is often the place of purification. And I think the physical pain is a powerful locale of purification for much of our life, especially meditative life. So there are three kinds of physical pain that a person might have in practice on the cushion. One is structural pain, and that is a pain that arises because of some kind of physical problem in your body, with your posture or something else, and that needs to be respected very carefully. To understand it, to study it very carefully, and maybe know how to adjust your posture to see what's how to sit in a better way. Sometimes one of the great advantages of mindfulness is that you can go and pay much more careful attention to structural, physiological pain than you can if we constantly ignore it, and we can learn some of the lessons of it, how to adjust our posture, how to sit better, how to walk better, how to relate better to that physical pain, how not to compound the physical pain with contraction around it, but how to study it carefully and study how the various ways in which we contract around it, so we can maybe be more at ease at it. And if the muscles aren't contracted around pain, then often that part of the body can heal more easily, or at least it's not, the pain is not compounded with the extra amount of suffering. And I think it's often a pity that when people have poor postural habits in meditation and they have pain, it's a pity that they don't figure out some way to sit better or get some more guidance or help from a teacher or a yoga teacher of how to sit in a better way that that can help them with the really simple, sometimes structural pain. Sometimes structural pain requires something requires sometimes laying down in meditation. You know, some people with very bad back problems will lay down and do the meditation lying down. There's all kinds of ways that we can adjust the posture so that structural pain doesn't really get worse, doesn't become problematic. I've known some people who've done meditation practice who didn't do really mindfulness or weren't very respectful of their body and have actually damaged themselves, especially the knees, because they weren't just paying attention. They thought that the point of the practice was to tough it out. So there certainly can be structural problems. Part of the difficulty is many of us are very quick to judge, oh, this is structural, I have to run away from it or turn away from it and change it. And there's lots of physical pain in the body which is not structural in nature. And so if we're constantly adjusting and constantly trying to avoid it, then maybe we're not really going into the healthy fire, as the poem says, that we need to go into, and we're constantly pulling back from something. So, now structural pain can have some deep-seated root in some injury or some kind of something going on in our body, but also sometimes it arises out of poor postural habits. And this, I think, needs to be respected also. If we spend a lifetime slouching or hunched over or sitting and walking or holding ourselves a certain way, then if you sit down and try to take a relatively aligned posture when meditation, then some of these, the holding patterns reveal themselves. And if the muscles have been overdeveloped, then if they're going to start relaxing, sometimes that tension of being overly held, they begin to relax, and in the relaxing, they begin to hurt. And certain muscles, as they begin opening up and becoming relaxed, they go through a period where they get more painful rather than less painful. If a muscle is constantly contracted, which it is for many people in our society, some muscles, the shoulders, the stomach, the muscles seem to eventually go numb. And so the process of awakening those parts of the body is the awakening sensitivity there. And unfortunately, for some of us, the process of increased sensitivity in those places comes with more pain. And if we go back into a numb state or pull back from that, then the healing process of that kind of holding maybe won't proceed as quickly as it can. The other, on the other side, there can be muscles which are weak. If we always have poor posture, some muscles are overdeveloped, but some are weak. And so sitting up in a lined way, the weak muscles get tired, and so they can start burning sometimes quite intensely. So we have to be sometimes patient with the muscle-building part of what good meditation involves. And muscle-building requires hanging in there, maybe not pushing it too much, but staying there enough to let the muscles develop. And it's useful. So you might ask, well, why bother? Why don't I just sit like a couch potato? It's kind of slouching in my couch the way I always am at home. Why don't I just do my meditation that way? And I seem to get quite peaceful, just kind of, you know, I build up this whole throne of wonderful pillows all around me, and have my arms propped up and my feet propped up, and I kind of disappear in all these soft cushions and pillows, or maybe even better, you can get a water bed or a submersion tank, you know, where the temperature is perfect, and just floating in this wonderful tank of water like John Lilly made in the 70s. And then you can really be peaceful, right? No hindrances. But I think part of what I think healthy spirituality entails is really meeting our life as it is, to meeting our structural life, how we hold ourselves, our posture, and not to try to just create the ideal conditions around us so we can be peaceful, but rather to discover how to be peaceful in the life that we live. And so taking basically an aligned, healthy posture helps us, I think, in the process of meeting ourselves as we actually are. So there's all kinds of structural pain, physiological pain we have to respect and be careful with and maybe get help with at times, or maybe learn how to work with it, developing strength where the muscles are weak. I think there's a syndrome in the modern West, in some corners of it at least. I'll say it this way. I have this impression that many years ago, 50, 100 years ago, there was a common attitude in America that if you had some kind of problems, psychological or physical, you had to strengthen yourself, build more strength to kind of take care of that situation. And that part of that was maybe part of a whole context of also repression and denying things and kind of... and so people rejected the whole package. And so there's an attitude that we have to kind of just, spirituality or our life is mostly about relaxing. You know, if we have a back problem, we have to just relax. But actually, building strength is a very important part of a human life. And I think anyone who knows physical therapy knows that if you have a back problem, sooner or later, often building up strength is really what's important. So this is all a plug towards developing good posture and working with some of the discomfort that arises with that. Now, some of the physical pain that comes from sitting is psychological in origin. Certainly, our postural habits can often have a psychological root, but often it can be other things. Our emotions are completely intimately tied with our muscles. And as I think most of us know, we get afraid and the shoulders get tight. We get angry or the muscles in the stomach get tight, or the face or the jaws. If we get happy or relaxed or contented, often that comes with a softening or relaxing of some of the musculature. And so a lifetime of certain emotional responses or attitude towards life will often get carried in our musculature, in our body. And often again, if it's constantly being held, it can get numb. And part of waking up in the body is to wake up to these emotions and these attitudes which are held in our muscles. And that waking up can involve a period of being painful, being tight and hurt, and being sometimes quite intensely painful. People who repress emotions, which is common enough, they repress certain parts of their body, means that parts of the body go numb. And part of the process of waking up that part of the body involves becoming sensitive to the emotions that have been repressed in that part, and that can often entail a physically painful period of practice. So it's important to be able to distinguish between emotional pain and psychological pain, physical pain, and know, and if emotional pain that's held in the body physically, is to have some confidence that it's okay to hang out there and study it and work with it and not turn away from it too quickly. So there's that. And then the third kind of pain, so there's physical pain that's physiological or structural in nature. There's physical pain which is psychological in nature. And the third is sometimes called dharmic pain, physical pain which is called dharmic. And this is maybe just a fancy Buddhist way of saying we don't have a clue why it's there. It's there for causes and conditions that we don't, you know, it's not physical, it's not necessarily, you're not going to hurt yourself by hanging out with that, it's not more damage. There's no discernible psychological reason for it. It's just there. And it can be quite intense, phenomenally intense. But, just there. One of the ways of distinguishing between psychological kind of structural pain, which it might be hurting yourself or comes from some kind of injury or something, and psychological and dharmic and dharma pain, is psychological and dharmic physical pain tends to go away at the end of the sitting almost immediately. You break the posture and like, wow, you thought you couldn't stand one more second, and then someone rings the bell and it all goes away and you sit quite contently. You haven't changed your posture at all, but it's quite amazing. And you realize how much in your mind was creating it or tied up with it. If the physical pain continues after the sitting, especially if it goes for more than a couple of minutes, then you might want to take very careful attention to what you're doing. You might be causing some damage and maybe change your posture, work with it, or investigate it more on a physical level for a while. Dharmic pain, can be, I've had searing dharmic pain, so-called dharmic pain, and as soon as the bell rings, it's gone and vanishes. One of the more important lessons I've learned around physical pain, especially this kind of dharmic pain, didn't seem to have any particular source or origins, was eventually learning not to be bothered by it. And the real transformative practice for me, or transformation for me, was not fixing it or changing it or anything, but somehow having some inner change so I wasn't bothered by it anymore. I remember a number of times in my practice, but one in particular, where I had a tremendous amount of pain in my shoulder blade, and it just burned. It was really intense. And it would go away as soon as the sitting was over. And sometimes it was there, sometimes it wasn't. But it was quite intense, and to this day I don't know why it was there. And I would go to my teacher and talk about this burning pain in my shoulder. And he would give me all kinds of wonderful advice. I practice equanimity, investigate it more, look at my relationship to the pain, and all kinds of wonderful things, And I would dutifully try them all out, and it just got worse. I went kind of batty from all this pain. And I would go make special interviews with my teacher to kind of talk about it because it was just driving me crazy. So finally, maybe he was getting exasperated with me. I don't know how he would. Anyway, I came one day, one more time, talked about the intense pain in my shoulder blade. And he just kind of said lightly, maybe in a past lifetime you punched someone out in the shoulder. And this is your, the karmic retribution, the karmic consequences of that. So I don't know anything about rebirth, but somehow when he said that, my attitude was, my feeling suddenly was changed. Oh, it's there because of causes and conditions. I don't have to know why. And somehow that idea kind of pulled the rug under all my aversion, hostility, and impatience with it. And I wasn't bothered by it anymore. And all this practice of equanimity and acceptance and studying the relationship hadn't really kind of gotten into what was really going on for me. And this little statement magically kind of transformed it for me, and I was no longer bothered by it. And the pain continued. It wasn't as intense, that because part of the intensity came from being bothered by it. You ever had that experience? And so you think it's the pain that's, you know, in and of itself, which is a problem. But sometimes it's the relationship we have. We're being bothered. And it's really amazing to me how much pain I can be present for and not be bothered by. I'm also amazed by how much pain I can be present for and be bothered by. But knowing that it's possible not to be bothered gives a lot of confidence. So why bother with pain? I mean, by now I think I've given enough reasons. Why stay present for it? Why not just avoid it and take the aspirin or get a massage? Massages are interesting, or, you know, taking pain medication or whatever that a doctor might prescribe. It's interesting because those approaches approach the physical pain from the outside in. And sometimes that's appropriate, but often that will overlook the psychic side, the psychological, spiritual, the inner side of that person. The doctor simply prescribes muscle relaxant or pain relief, or prescribes massage. Maybe it's providing relief at times, but the underlying causes of that, the psychological causes, the emotional causes, if that's the case, go undiagnosed and unaddressed. And so if that's the root of the pain or part of it, then the person's not really being addressed to where the cause is. So in mindfulness practice is one of these great practices that helps us look at the inside, really deep inside, what's really going on. And if it is, in case, an emotional or psychological root or spiritual root, then the mindfulness can get deeper than a massage or pain medication or muscle relaxant can. And you know, it provides more than just symptomatic relief, but really hopefully gets down into the root of the cause. Some teachers like to emphasize the value of physical pain in that it simply helps develop concentration. It's very compelling. You know, you've struggled for years to be present for your breathing, and you can't because, you know, your mind wanders off every 3-4 seconds or 3-4 breaths. And somehow the breath is not that compelling, but the pain arises and you don't want it to be there, you want it to go away, but boy, is it, are you there? I mean, you're not anywhere else. I mean, all the other concerns you have in life, you kind of burn up in the context of pain. When I was a Zen student, my early Zen practice, I had a lot of this experience. In Zen, the idea was you were not supposed to move in meditation. Once you sit down, you're supposed to sit still. And I think there was much more leeway for movement than I realized. I was just a young, stupid kid when I started practicing Zen. I was about 20. And so I just thought it was absolute strict. You couldn't move at all. So I would do these one-day retreats where they had 10 minutes of walking meditation between 40 minutes of sitting. And my knees, my legs in particular, just were burning. It was intense pain. And to get a sense how painful it was, when I got up to do this 10 minutes of walking meditation, my whole body would shake. And it took 10 minutes for my body to kind of calm down and be still, and then I had to go back and sit again. And I don't recommend this to anyone at all. However, it did serve me really well. I'm grateful for that time, because I didn't hurt myself, I didn't damage myself with that pain, but it was a phenomenal purification practice. Some of that tension that was being released was really deep-seated psychological tension in my body, and then really kind of being with it and just not running away from it kind of allowed it to kind of release itself, and it released during that walking period. But also it was this intense meeting with myself. I had to really be present, and all wonderful romantic spiritual ideas I knew or I thought of how my practice was about weren't sustainable in the fire of the pain. And many of us have romantic ideas of what we're trying to do with our spiritual life or with our life, or kind of have simple ideas or intentions or hopes or self-identities. You know, my idea is that I was the God's next gift to Buddhism. You know, I was this great meditator or whatever. You know, I was just, you know, the pain humbled me, you know, from that. And or that meditation was about becoming, peaceful, or whatever intention I had or idea I had of spirituality just burned up entirely in this physical pain. Nothing was sustainable. And since nothing was sustainable, what was left? And having a situation where everything was taken away, in a sense, and nothing was left, was a phenomenally powerful experience in anybody's life. People who have the same experience, not necessarily through physical pain, but through health reasons, or when people die, or whatever, will often report the same thing, same gratitude towards a difficulty, usually quite after the fact. Wow, that was one of the best things I ever went through in my life, but at the time, it was the worst. When the things are taken away, sometimes we see our life in its in a much more direct way than we can. We have this filter, veil, of fears and ideas that we have, that we often live through. Some teachers focus on the value of pain. It simply helps us get concentrated, and that concentration is tremendously purifying. Sometimes physical pain is useful because it's a very important place where we can distinguish the difference between the actual experience we're having and our reaction and relationship to that experience. Pain is probably the preeminent place to see that distinction, which is a really important thing in mindfulness practice, is to see how there's an experience in our interpretation of it. There's an experience in our aversion to it. There's an experience in our clinging to it. The experience and our relationship to it are two different things. But for most of us, those two different things are totally entangled, and we don't see the distinction between them. And as mindfulness develops, it's an extremely important part of practice is to see the distinction between these two. And one of the places where that distinction gets highlighted is in physical pain. And again, I'm not recommending you look for pain. Look for the opportunities for this. Don't ever look for opportunities to have pain. Don't, you know, sit in such a way. I remember at some point in my early Zen practice, I had a sense that physical pain was useful in some ways for practice. So I went to my teacher and said, you know, I can have a lot more pain if I sit in full lotus. And he said, don't look for pain. Don't try to make it happen. But when it comes, then, practice with it, but don't go looking for trouble. I was young, you know. Young and idealistic. I needed to have certain ideas burned up. And this is probably one of the more valuable places of physical pain. But also physical pain is purifying. Mindfulness practice, Buddhism itself is often called a path of purification. And we hold a tremendous amount of dispositions, of attitudes, of held feelings, attitudes towards life in our bodies. Some more traditional Buddhists would say it's lifetimes of holdings, lifetimes of tensions that are held in our bodies. And so part of practice is to purify that. And the purification process is one of release, and one of release is not necessarily going from unpleasant state to pleasant state. Part of it is purification. It's kind of like when you purify. What's the example? One of the examples I often give is purifying gold. That I don't know exactly how it's done, but maybe some of you understand. But as you purify gold, the impurities come to the surface of the gold. When you do your laundry, you have this beautiful, clear, clean, hetch hetchy water. When you start watering, the water comes into your washing machine, and then all the dirt comes out into the water, and the water gets all dirty. And if you complained about your water getting dirty, you called up the water department and said, "Hey, look, I have this dirty water in my washing machine or my laundry machine." They would kind of just say, "You're crazy, complain about that." The impurities come to the surface, and as they come to the surface, it's not necessarily a pretty sight, but that's part of the process of any purification. Working with physical pain in meditation, even when you can avoid it, is useful in situations in our life when pain is unavoidable. And there are times when pain is unavoidable, where you say, no, you know, nowadays we have all this good medication, you know, and I can take narcotics, and my doctor is my good friend, and, you know, I don't have to have, you know, there's no reason to experience any physical pain anymore at all. That's pretty naive to have that kind of attitude. You don't really know what's going to happen to you. I was told I was at Tassajara this last week, and the day that maybe some people here, maybe one of you who was here saw it, but there was a woman who, a couple of women, I think, who were driving into Tassajara on that dirt road, and their car overheated, and so they stopped the car and get out, and I guess they went to get something. One woman went to get something from the trunk or something from the car, and just as she did that, just like in the movies, the car exploded, and so she burned herself. And but you know, you're out 7 miles on dirt road, away, far away from anything. So they started walking, and then one of the other guests going to Tassajara, I think, came across them, and drove them back to the main road, and the helicopter came and flew them to the hospital. So this person was out there in the middle of nowhere with physical pain. So we never know when these things happen. My friend who fell at Green Gulch, the Zen Center, he fell off the roof and broke his arm. And he was laying there on the ground waiting for the paramedics to come, just laying there. And finally the paramedics came, and they looked down at him and said, "Breathe deeply." He'd been a Zen student for 10 years. He laying there, he rolled his eyes up. You know, he had years of experience. It wasn't so. So there's that kind of very pragmatic reason that if you learn to work with pain and understand your reactions to it on the cushion, then that translates in situation, real life situations where maybe it's it's really helpful. So working with physical pain in meditation practice, it's important to be gentle about it, and not to rush into it, not to be kind of this great kind of green beret kind of approach or samurai approach. But it's also important not to hold back and to avoid it entirely. And there's an art then to kind of entering into it. Maybe sometimes going into the center of it, sometimes hanging out the edges of it. Kind of exploring the edges of the pain, not going to the place where it's most intense, but just being with it for a while, being at the edges of it and seeing what your reaction, your relationship is, the emotions that get stimulated. And sometimes going into the heart of the pain and really exploring it, really with great intimacy, feeling it. One of the great paradoxes about pain is that the greater the intimacy, the greater the physical, the greater the concentration on the pain, the actual place of pain, the more it gets transformed into something else. Maybe not as dramatically as the poem, but from a distance, the pain is often related to as if it's a solid mass, and often we relate to the pain in the concepts we have about the pain. But if you look very, very intimately at pain, the pain is not solid, it's not permanent, but rather is actually a dance of sensations. Sensations arising and passing very quickly, jumping around. You can feel, I have lots of experience with some physical pain in my knee, and if I get really close to it, it's not happening maybe within a square inch, but within a square inch it's actually moving and dancing around quite a bit, and arising one place and disappearing, coming, hopping up another place and disappearing. And it's not constant. And as the concentration gets stronger, it actually, the painful part might actually disappear entirely. And it's just vibration. Maybe first very intense vibration, but not necessarily painful. And then just vibration. And so to bring yourself to the heart of the pain, you can be felt very differently than how it feels if you're holding it from a distance, seeing it from a distance. Sometimes it's useful to back off from the pain 90% and just be with the breathing and just breathe and just feel the pain in the background. Especially when if there's a lot of emotional reactions to the pain, sometimes the breathing with the breathing kind of softens all those reactivity, and then it's easier later to be with a pain. The breath is a very helpful ally with all this. Just breathing into the pain at times can be very helpful. part of the attitude you can have in meditation is, how can I have a meditative approach, a meditative attitude towards this pain? And meditative attitude is one that allows you to be open to it, but without reacting to it. Is there a way of being open and present in an unreactive way? Is it possible to be equanimous with this? Is it possible to be at peace in it? And sometimes that's impossible to find. But with my shoulder pain, when I tried to do that, I couldn't find it. But sometimes it's possible to find that. And just for some people, just simply the idea that there's another way of being with their pain than the normal way, that you can bring a meditative awareness to it, is enough. Like, oh, that's what it takes. Oh, and then we bring that to it. I've had situations where I've been in pain and felt sorry for myself and self-pity and all kinds of wonderful, popular approaches like that. And just kind of feeling worse and worse. And then finally remembering, wait a minute. You know, I know about this mindfulness practice. I don't even know about it. I mean, I teach it. So sometimes, you know, it's not so automatic to remember to do it, right? So, I'll bring mindfulness to it. And as soon as I bring the mindfulness to it, all this kind of coolness sets in, all the reaction and kind of all the problems around it. And the pain is still there, but it's much more manageable. It's, oh, okay, I just continue and with what I'm doing here. And then, as many of you realize, staying mindful is not always so easy, right? So the mind begins to wander off, and I've managed to be with the pain a little bit. It doesn't bother me anymore because I'm really present for it. And so then my mind gets complacent and off starts wandering, thinking about something. And once the mind kind of wanders off and thinks about something, then it might sooner or later start thinking about how horrible the pain is, and oh, why me, you know, it's so hard, and you know, and self-pity and all this, and aversion and all this sets in, and before I realize, wait a minute, I know a better way. I'll be mindful. And then I'll be mindful again. And it's rather, rather humbling, certainly embarrassing to tell you, but this is the way the mind often works, right? The mind, so the trick is to stay present and remember to bring mindfulness to it, and often things can be a lot easier then. And the mind wanders off, we forget, and then it gets difficult enough, and that teaches us to remember again. It's good to have some humor around all this, not to take it too seriously. Even with physical pain, it can be kind of a mischievous attitude towards it, or a humorous attitude. Here it is again. Let's see what my response is. What's my reaction? Here's that old self-pity. Wow, you know, wow, here I am. Here's aversion again. I hate it. Wow, here I'm a human being hating my pain. Am I the first person in the world to hate pain? You know, or you can actually look at these things kind of lightly and kind of humorously. And if you can't do that, then maybe you can use it as a place to cultivate compassion. And we see ourselves as being, this kind of pain is something that many people in the world experience. And many people don't have a practice, don't have a way out of it. And this is really hard. And that, in some sense, the harder it is for us, the greater is the birth of compassion. And sometimes all we need is mostly more self-compassion. And in doing that, to have a greater capacity for compassion for the people around us who are suffering a lot. So I hope this talk has encouraged, inspired you to not turn away from pain, but to study it, to investigate it with your mindfulness. And in doing that, perhaps understand when the physical pain is something to actually be avoided because it's maybe structural in nature or causing greater harm than good, causing injury. Or the investigation helps you understand when the physical pain arises out of deep-seated psychological or spiritual or dharmic causes, and it's really useful to hang out with it and be with it. Even when it's structural in nature, if you're not injuring yourself, I think sometimes it's quite useful to hang out with it. It's not necessarily bad. So I hope you've been inspired to have a more painful life a little bit. And in the process, have a more pleasant life, have a more wonderful, peaceful life, and a happier life, and a more humorous life, and that you discover the wonderful, and I say, you know, God's reversal. Fire and water themselves, accidental, done with mirrors. One group walks into the fire, another towards the sweet flowing water. Whoever walks into the fire appears suddenly in the stream. A head goes under on the water surface, that head pokes out of the fire. If we spend our life averting ourselves from our difficulties, their difficulties only get compounded. So any questions, protests, concerns before we end? We have time for one or two questions. If no one has a question or has a comment, then I'm going to worry. Yes. Mala is a Buddhist beads, yeah. Buddhist rosary.
Yeah, I thought, well, maybe this will somehow be magical. You know, I'll hold it. You know, and then, of course, I realized while I was sitting there that I could use it, and that it would take my mind away from a lot of pain. And that was a terrific practice. It was really fantastic. And I found a place inside that I can hang out with, a very, very deep place, a soul place, a true nature place, that didn't feel pain. And the pain, sort of, because of the intense presence of the depth of that meditation, the pain and it was just sort of on the periphery. What was happening, and it was really an extraordinary experience. So I wanted to just encourage people to use it. I felt I'm still feeling positive results from that, and I was thinking as I walked away from the dentist's office, hearing a conversation by Stephen Levine on. He was being interviewed on the radio about a year ago, and he had a new book out, and he was talking about how important it was to practice our relationship to pain every day, because we hate it so much that the minute it comes up, we, instead of being kind to ourselves and being kind to it and softening around it, we have this reaction that immediately is set up. Oh, pain. This is America. We don't have any pain here, which is kind of what he was saying. And just immediately this whole pattern set in. And how that it's important to practice all the time. If you bang your foot, not just on the pillow, if you bang your foot and, you know, have an accident or whatever it is, that you will learn something that will help you as you get older and as you move into the inevitable disintegration of the body. Which is the other big issue, is let's not talk about that. But I thought that was really a good teaching, and I just wanted to comment that by just doing the practice in the intense pain of all that was going on in the nerve, in my head, I started out with a headache, everything, that there was a tremendous amount of teaching.
Yeah, great. They're great. Thank you very much. Yeah.
you asked for protests, so I wanted to say something else about massage. I've been doing that, and my experience has been, if I'm really with the masseuse working on my body, that quite often it's not going from something that's painful to something that's pleasurable, but it's going from something that's numb to something that's painful. So I've actually found it very useful in waking up places in my body that are asleep, as opposed to using it to get rid of the pain.
Great. Great. Thank you. It's an important protest, because I don't want to leave the impression that I am critical of massage. I think massage and body work is very important. It has a very important place in our lives. Though sometimes people use it as a way of just the surface of it, the surface of their life, kind of to get away from stuff rather than to go deep into it. Yeah. I think the greater our mindfulness, the greater we can discern that information, learn from it. Yeah, I think I very much agree. Yes. So if we start becoming a little more comfortable hanging out with pain, then the kind of unhealthy responses we tend to have to them will maybe become lessened. So thank you all very much for responding and listening, and I'll see you in a few weeks. Thank you.